Welcome to The Barbell Strikes Back. I'm your host, James McDermott, and today I'm super excited because I have a good friend of mine joining us on the show, John North. For those of you who don't know, maybe you've been living under a rock, John North is a legendary weightlifter in the USA. He's a national champion, an American Open champion, an Arnold champion, a four-time Team USA member, and the author of the Dark Orchestra book. I could go on and on, but let's get to it. John, how are we doing?
James, I'm good, brother. Thanks for having me on.
I know. This is so great. I've been wanting to have you on the show for a while. And really, the reason this show exists in part is because you made me go out and buy a microphone and headset.
Well, first of all, I'm so glad you're doing your show, and I'm glad to be on. I love your podcast name. I just watched all the Star Wars for the first time not too long ago with my wife Jessica, and we're Star Wars fans now, so it's perfect.
Yeah, the Barbell Strikes Back. It's so true. You know, what's one? I'm sure you have a thousand stories, but you know very well the barbell will strike back. You're feeling good. You just hit a PR. You think you're the boss, John, but all of a sudden you go for that extra.
Well, we're going off blocks this week on a block cycle, and you've seen a lot of barbells strike back on that when you drop the weight and, you know, it hits kind of the corner of the blocks and it shoots out and tries to take you out by the shin. We've seen a few of those the last week. Also weights that do the same thing, that break windows and walls and, acting as tanks, if you will. So it's been pretty crazy.
Yeah, I saw a couple of the guys on Coach by John broke their floors.
Yeah, it's been wild. You cut your hair, James?
I did. I cut it myself now. You're the first guest to notice. Thank you.
I noticed. And it's the quarantine life in New York, so you obviously just shaved it right off.
You know, I couldn't take it anymore, so I went to YouTube, and I'm like, I'm just gonna handle this myself. I had my beard trimmer. I did this with my beard trimmer. Actually, okay. And then what's happening now, though, is it's getting a little dangerous. Every single time I go shorter, I'm just like, I'm getting obsessed with going shorter and shorter and shorter. I'm not gonna shave it all off, but I'm worried that every time I start experimenting, so it's like, well, I wonder how much shorter I can take this.
It looks good.
Yeah, I did the one on the side and then a little bit higher on the top and then blend it in.
It looks very good.
Well, you know, actually, part of why I have you on the show today is I wanted to tell you I'm retiring from coaching and weightlifting, and I'm going to become a barber.
A barber. Hey, that's a great profession. You know, my mom owned a salon growing up as a kid, and I have a lot of great memories in a hair salon. And it slash a nail salon growing up as a kid, playing in the back room and cleaning the salon and cleaning up hair. And, you know, it's actually a magical place, you know, especially as a kid, you know, you're kind of in a whole new world, and you can, you know, all the hair stuff and the clips, it was like a big playground.
Yeah. All the new people coming in all the time, all the new characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Well, maybe that'll be something to fall back on someday. I won't take the leap so far. How's training going?
Wow. Glad you asked. Last week was my first week back. I've been doing like a little bit of bodybuilding and running and cycling and hiking, you know, just kind of, it's been a crazy move from Colorado to Oregon. So that's been, you know, taking up a lot of time. And we're out here in God's country, out here in Central Oregon, Prineville, Oregon, just beautiful. A lot of outdoor things to do. Been trying to buy equipment, but just can't. It's all sold out. You know, all the gyms have been closed, but now things are starting to open. And found there's a CrossFit gym here called Prineville CrossFit. So checked them out. Went and met the owner, Mike. Great guy. Sat down with him and just had a great conversation. And last week I got two sessions in. Tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. we're back to normal schedule. And just try to stay healthy and kind of get back to the grind. Kind of, you know, back to the parking lot of Mount Everest, you know, somehow you're just like, man, you know, how did I get back to the parking lot? So we got to hit base camps, climb high and see how high we can get.
Is it exciting, you know, being in a situation where you have to be a minimalist again? Like, you don't have the competition disc, you don't have the bar that you want, you know, like you're just in a CrossFit gym, probably just doing whatever you can. Is there some excitement to that for you anymore? Like just, you've been involved with it for so long, but now all of a sudden just to have it all stripped away and just have it be raw again.
Yeah. Getting back to the parking lot is actually always fun. You know, there's no pressure. It's just all exciting. You can snatch 80 kilos and be super happy, even though my best is 175. Like, you know, like, hey, I hit 80 today. Maybe tomorrow I'll hit 85. Like, you feel like a kid again. You feel like you just got into the sport and you're climbing back up the ladder and it's all exciting. It's all new, even though it's not new. You know, can I qualify for these meets? When are the next local meets, you know, occurring? So you're like a little kid on Christmas morning. You're excited again. When you hit really high base camps and you're way up there, you know, then the nerves kick in and, you know, the big national meets, and then, you're looking at a podium and you're battling your competition and who's doing what, and it gets political and to make US teams. And, you know, when you're up in the clouds like that, it's a little bit of a different world. So yeah, being back in the parking lot, just drinking coffee, lifting weights, you know, with, you know, really just having fun with it. You're right. There's a certain freedom to that.
Yeah. I mean, you got to have fun with it. I think a lot of people restarting again, it'd be pretty discouraging. And then next thing you know, you're like, well, maybe I'll go and I'll just focus on jogging or something else, you know, because it's hard to come back to that barbell.
And it's humbling too. You realize how tough of a sport this is, you know, when you walk in the gym, and even though I've been doing this close to 15 years, you know, a 100-kilo snatch almost crushes my soul. And it's heavy, and getting through an actual session is almost impossible. And you're like, wow, this is a tough sport. And it's a humbling feeling. You know, it's the barbell reminding you that it will buck your ass off. Excuse my language. Yeah. It'll buck you off.
Like a wild bull.
It will, you know, and it's a rodeo is really what it is. So, you know, I'm treading on just like an old Rogue bar, got some bumper plates, you know, it's a CrossFit gym. It's on a barbell club, which sounds like it's going to change. I mean, Mike is the owner of this gym. He's very eager to get a barbell club going and get a weightlifting team and do meets. He wants to compete. So it's great to be a part of a gym that's eager to get in the world of weightlifting rather than a gym owner that is a know-it-all and kind of, you know, has his nose up and I know everything. And, you know, basically it's my way or the highway. That's never fun. So it's cool to kind of start at ground zero with this gym. Speaking of the sport of weightlifting.
Now, are you still going to go forward with building a barbell club at your house? By the way, you were the first person in podcast history. I like to document these things to do the podcast outside.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's some kind of a podcast record. Well,
I thought people were going to be able to see me, but I guess not. So I was going for like a really good ambiance, and I'm on my wife's computer, so I can't hook it up to my podcast equipment with my microphone. So then I'm like, well, I have the freedom to do this podcast anywhere. I might as well go outside in the beautiful mountains of Prineville, Oregon here.
Yeah. Right? I mean, how does that feel? Normally you're like chained to all that equipment and now you're just out and about. Look at that. It's gorgeous there.
You see that?
Yeah. Wow.
No, I need to start maybe taking the podcast outside somehow, but no, it's a good question, James. The original idea was to get a garage gym going. Will that happen? I don't know. It's kind of pivoted, knowing now that I'm training at Prineville CrossFit and how great they are and the community and the people. That's kind of where my direction's going now. There has been talk of opening up our own facility out here, kind of going more of the strength and conditioning route, kind of the model of Cal Strength, which is a compliment to obviously Dave. So there's ideas floating around. But as of right now, it looks like God's just directed me to go slam bars at Primal CrossFit. So yeah. we'll see what's next.
I mean, it's funny, you know, in the journey of weightlifting, the people that come across your path, you know, and you spark up these new relationships and meet new people and it opens up new opportunities, and they don't always all work out, but it all makes you better.
Right. It is so true. I just posted a video on Facebook called, it's a YouTube video. It's titled John North Midnight Blues. You've maybe seen it, but it's just like a kind of a video that, even though it was posted in 2016. So, I mean, 4 years is 4 years of life and lifting and adventures have happened since then, but from basically 2000, you know what, a long time ago to now, or to 2016. It's kind of a timeline of so many different meets and seminars and traveling and you know, gosh, it just kind of watching that video, it makes you think, you know, you do cross a lot of paths in the sport, and you know, you should be appreciative of all of them.
Do you ever look back at those old videos? Like, I've been experiencing this lately. On my Instagram page, I've been posting things, you know, that I've just found on old flash drives, like things from like 2011. Mm. And I look at these videos and these pictures, and I'm like, who is that person? Like, I don't know who that is anymore. You know, do you ever look at these old vlogs and old videos and wonder, who is that guy?
You know, there's a few things. A, some bodybuilding pictures that pop up with some videos when I was like, you know, 250, 260, and I was just a monster. And, you know, sometimes I look at those pictures and videos, and I'm just like, who's that guy? That, wow, I don't even know who that is. That dude's a monster. Like, you know, when you're bodybuilding in the mindset of the time, you're never big enough. You're never jacked enough. You want to get bigger. You just want to constantly get better. And so you never take a step back and actually like almost kind of appreciate the work you put in. It's actually kind of an unhealthy mindset, really, that sport can kind of do to you.
Yeah.
So a few of those, that kind of bodybuilding time period from like 2014 to 16, before I died there at the Portland Zoo. And then the other one would probably be cut my cussing. I try not to cuss anymore. I can't say that I don't. Sometimes it slips up, but I don't cuss. I try not to cuss. And if I do, it's completely on accident. And looking back at some podcasts and some YouTube, you know, I'm just, you know, I was feisty back then and just dropping the F-bomb left and right. And I'm not judging anybody that cusses. I'm not even judging myself, but I just don't cuss anymore. And so hearing myself cuss sometimes is kind of weird.
Yeah. I mean, hey, Attitude Nation, you know, with a capital A
right.
at times.
With a capital A and all bold. Yes, that's a good point.
Yeah. Well, looking back over the years, you know, you mentioned this, that you've been in it for so long. And earlier you mentioned that on the comeback, you know, it keeps you humble. Do you think that one reason you've been in the sport for so long and endured where other people have just quit and bombed out of the sport, so to say, because of the restarts and the humbleness that comes with them?
You know, I think that the sports humbled me too, because I realized that, you know, the sport's rock solid and it's not going anywhere. It might have a bad year, it might have a great year, it might grow, it might slow down. But at the end of the day, I've realized that the sport's been around since the 1800s. It's one of the oldest sports in the world, right by wrestling. And no matter how big you get or how big of a following or how many seminars you do, at the end of the day, weightlifting's still weightlifting. No matter how big CrossFit is, no matter how big the individual is, no matter what, no matter the changes, it's still the sport of weightlifting. And I feel like that's humbled me, because I feel like there was a time in my career where, you know, you look at the individual athletes, including myself, and you learn how to respect the sport more the older you get, when you're not lifting, or, you know, when you kind of hit a downfall in your life or in the sport of weightlifting, or you take a back seat to lifting, and then you realize that the show still goes on. There's still great lifters. There's still upcoming lifters coming up all the time. There's lifters that are lifting more than you back in your prime. You know, and you start to think, man, I guess I was just grateful to be a part of it rather than leading the charge on top. So I think that that's humbling. It's just how strong this sport really is. I'm not talking about USAW president, or I'm not even really talking about USAW. I'm mostly just talking about the sport of weightlifting, how, man, it's been through a lot and it's not going anywhere.
It almost sounds like you have a different understanding than most do. You know, maybe most come into the sport and they only see themselves and they only apply everything to how big they could be. But it's kind of like you're saying, like, if you realize how big the universe is and how small you are in comparison to everything else, then it makes you appreciate life and things a little bit different. And that's kind of how you're looking at weightlifting.
You know, also having so many athletes that are masters athletes, and now I have a few junior lifters, but mostly masters. I mean, gosh, I mean, my online team has just a giant group of masters lifters, which is fantastic. But the international competitions and the national competitions, and even in the local kind of more glorified master competitions that are real well known, this is all new to me. And I'm like seeing a whole different side of the sport of weightlifting in this masters division as a coach. And I'm like, wow, this is something I've never experienced. I don't know about. And it's humbling. It's like, man.
It's so cool, the master scene.
Never been a part of it. And it's a whole journey that's new for me as well that I'm taking, you know, an adventure on. So,
yeah, I know, like, for myself as an athlete, looking at the masters, like starting weightlifting so late in life, it's almost like, all right, well, getting to 35 years old is a goal now. It's like, oh, when I turn 35, there's no like life crisis or anything like that. I get to sign up for badass weightlifting meets.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's exciting. I mean, I turn 35 next year in January, so I'll be a master next year. And you know, I mean, I'm at that we'll see how my body holds up training, you know, the next year coming up, you know, but, I mean, I did take top, I took 10th last year at nationals in the senior division. So, you know, I got pretty high on the base camps. I could see, you know, with my binoculars, the podium.
Even you see the guys camped out up top.
Yeah,
their campfire.
Camps up the campfire with the smoke, and I'm down there.
They're roasting marshmallows.
Right, like I could see it. So, you know, I feel like I could still be semi-competitive. You know, I mean, A session nationals, you're one of the best in the country, you know, in that weight class. That's something that I'm pretty happy about. But, you know, hey, then there's masters where I think I can compete at a higher level, of course, when I hit 35. But then again, I'm still hungry for the senior division on seeing how close or possibly even stepping on a bronze podium if I can stay healthy and, you know, my daughter's heart continues to improve and life, you know, so many different things occur when you're 35 years old with two kids and a family and you're coaching full time and all that, but we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of the sport in general, the way it's managed. You can do the masters meets when you're a certain age and you can still throw down in the seniors. It's just all right. Open now. And it really, it's more meets you can go to, more people you can tangle with.
Don't tell my wife that. Cause you know, she doesn't want me getting hurt, you know, and you know, with my back and some issues I have, you know, she wants me to be mobile when I'm older with our kids. And,
yeah, that's important.
And she doesn't want me in a dang wheelchair. So, you gotta be careful. The sport is hard on the body.
Oh yeah. It's tough. Well, in transitioning from, you know, like a senior athlete into the master's category and also as the athlete into the coaching category, you're wearing a lot of hats right now. How have you kind of evolved your whole philosophy of weightlifting and how you approach the sport just on how, you know, your own lifting style and your coaching? Cause I remember back in the day, the way it was we're going to snatch, we're going to clean jerk, we're going to max out on both of those. And then we're probably going to do some maxing out on the back squat too. You know, I remember that 2012, 2013, you know, when you were essentially my coach on Team Do there, that's all we did. We just did the lifts. How have you evolved with all that?
Well, first off, I'm a coach first before an athlete. And that's pretty new to me. You know, that's only a few years new. So, you know, I've really, you know, gosh, probably within a year, that's really new. So, you know, coach first, athlete second.
I like that.
And my main focus is coaching 100%. I am definitely secondary. I do it for fun and I don't do it, you know, as a professional anymore. I do it for fun. So, you know, and I have goals too as a coach to put, you know, these lifters on the podium and make teams and have them succeed in weightlifting. You know, that's my number one goal now. So that would be my first answer. Also, as far as programming goes, you know, seeing the feedback from the athletes is key. You have to see the feedback. That's why me and my wife, who's behind me right now, grinding out, sending out the programs as we speak for this week, We do week-to-week programming. So we program every Sunday, even on a cycle. Like right now, we're doing a three-week block cycle. We write the program fresh every week. And I think that's important because you want the feedback from the athletes. What do they need? It's not what you need anymore. What do the athletes need? And, you know, that's something that is a philosophy we really believe in.
Yeah, no, that's a great philosophy. And I like how you timed the, you know, when you were saying how your the focus is solely on the athletes right when that guy hit the gas. I feel like that was like a good sign from the universe. It's really taken off. Mm-hmm. Now, with your coaching, how are you continuing to grow your melting pot? That was something that you used to talk about a lot back in the day. Grow your melting pot, hit seminars, read a book, an article, but also gain experience and get your hands dirty. How are you growing that melting pot as a coach?
How with masters athletes and in all different ages too. I mean, I have masters athletes that compete at a high level like Tommy, you know, who are, I think, you know, Tommy's 36, 37. So, you know, younger master athletes. And then I have athletes that are in their 60s. And learning how masters athletes adapt to the training, how they recover, you know, how much workload can you actually put on a masters athlete? How close can you get them to area 51, you know, AKA overtraining, and then backing off, you know, to create strength, you know, as Glenn Penley would always say, you know, this is all theory at the end of the day. And so I'm learning daily on how my athletes react to the training, react to the technique, react to the programming, react to the volume. And I'm constantly learning myself, especially in the master's division. There's a lot to learn. Also, you know, going out to Vegas this year, or I'm sorry, going out to the Arnold in Columbus, Ohio, we rolled in deep. I think, we had 23 athletes compete in Arnold, you know, which I saw you there, James.
That's huge. Yeah. That was a great meet.
And I mean, you know, coaching 23 athletes at a national competition, that was new to me. You know, I've coached some athletes at a national competition, and I've coached a lot of athletes at a local competition, but to go into a meet like the Arnold in Columbus with, you know, an Airbnb and flights and all that kind of stuff and coach 23 athletes was eye-opening to me. I made some mistakes. I made some great decisions. I feel like overall I did well, but I can improve. And it's just that self-reflection of looking yourself in the mirror and saying, okay, what did I do well on in this meet and what can I improve on in this meet? And that's what you constantly have to do as an athlete and as a coach. You have to constantly want to improve. And that's why so many lifters and coaches get stuck, is because they think basically they know everything.
Yeah, and it's like you said, you know, that was one of Glenn's quotes. Once you think you know everything, you know nothing. And that self-analysis is super important, you know, especially for a coach. Going back and realizing that as the coach, you can make mistakes too.
Like for instance, you know, like after my lifter, Aaron and Michael got done with their snatches, I went to the restroom and grabbed a little snack at this little convenience store there to get a protein bar, talked to someone for maybe 2 minutes. So maybe grand total, I was gone for 12 minutes. Came back and I was late.
Oh, man.
Already beginning, and my athletes weren't too far away from their first attempt, and so I had to pivot and get in the trenches with them. And you know, that's a perfect example of like, wow, there'll never be a time, and I'll remember that for the rest of my coaching career. I will never forget that. I'm never leaving between snatch and clean and jerk. I will pee up. I will pee in a bottle like Dumb and Dumber. And that's just one example of that'll never happen again.
It's funny. Like if I make a mistake as an athlete, it's one and done. It's gone. I forget about it, you know, but the mistakes I've made as a coach, I've lost sleep over, you know, like at the Arnold with one of Jen's lifts, I wasn't watching the clock and they called her for her first attempt on the snatch. And I realized she was up with like 10 seconds to go. So she got timed out on the snatch. And it's like that shouldn't happen. But it was a mistake. It happened, you know, like everyone's a part of the team. So like lifters make mistakes, coaches make mistakes. And you see that when you watch the world championships, when the coaches, you know, don't realize their lifter's up or something's going to happen. And it's all part of the game, but you just got to grow from it and do that self-analysis.
Right. So true. Yep.
Now, with the Arnold, you know, what are some things that you're hoping to change other than, you know, like not going away and taking a break between snatch and clean jerk, going into Vegas? Like, are you going to, like, I feel like Vegas is going to be like the energy going into that looks hot.
No, Vegas
have a solid game plan.
Yeah, we're rolling in deep, probably actually deeper than the Arnold, because A, it's Vegas. B, there was a lot of concern with COVID and then not letting the audience in. I don't know if that's going to be the same in Vegas. I hope it's not. So there was a lot of weird things going on with the government and USAW and all that kind of stuff. So we would have actually had more athletes go. So going in deep into Vegas, here's the tricky part. I know my athletes better now. And learning and understanding which athlete can open higher and which athlete needs to be a little more conservative. You know, there was athletes that I opened too heavy at the Arnold. Should have opened them a little lighter. Not saying they did bad. I just feel that, you know, they could have done a little better and they should have opened a little higher. And there's some athletes that I should have opened, or I'm sorry, there's some athletes I should have opened lower, and there's some athletes I should have even actually opened higher. And that just comes with time with an athlete, understanding each athlete and how they react to competition, what they can handle with nerves, et cetera. That's something that going into Vegas, I'm going to be much better at. You know, Aaron Torres, got to open a little higher. You know, Aaron Rowell, let's get one on the board and go. You know, let's lock it in and use that momentum. You know, even just the emotions, Michael Horner, calm, quiet lifter, how to react to that. You know, Matt Owen, a guy that is just feeds off energy. And you just need to basically slap him in the back and yell at him, you know, so let's go ahead and even do more of that in Vegas and let's see if he can lift even more. So I know my athletes better and that's going to help.
No, I feel like that's going to be huge. You know, it's interesting. You know, what you just said, it's the lifters who are the most calm and collected that I find it's almost the hardest to react with them, you know, and get them going. Like if I have a lifter and they're all fired up, it's like, okay, I got to make sure you're a little calm and not overdoing it. But like, I understand it, but then it's the ones that don't give you anything. And you're like, I hope you're okay.
That's so funny. It's so true.
So we're going into Vegas. We got a big team coming, opening some high, opening some a little bit lower, get some points on the board. Is there a start list out? Is that released yet?
No, not yet, but we're going to be a barbell club here shortly because I'm going to register my barbell club in my home garage here under Attitude Nation Barbell Club. So we're going to – Vegas will be, if everything works out, will be our first team meet for points.
Very cool.
So we'll see. You know, I mean, I've doing the checklist in my head, you know, probably have 27, 28 athletes compete in Vegas. And if we can put together some solid totals and have some fun, you know, we'll see what we can do as a team.
Who makes the decisions? You know, do they come to you and say, hey coach, I really want to open with, you know, with 100 on the snatch, or do you come to them and be like, I want to see you do this?
It's 50-50. I mean, some athletes are like, what should I open with? And some athletes say, I want to open at this. And most of the time, what they want to open with is what they shouldn't open with.
Yeah.
So it's either like, no, that's way too light. Come on. You know, I'm trying to think of somebody that, I don't know, just come on. You could open higher than that, you know, or like, whoa, where the heck did that number come from?
Yeah. You're opening with what would be your third attempt.
Yeah. If that. You know, so yeah, that's the thing. You got to just try to, you know, the 2 weeks leading up to the meet is really where the opener should be decided.
Yeah. How do you relay and weave in your own experiences when you're trying to, you know, tell your athletes like, hey, that's a little too high or that's too low, or you need to push harder in training. Like, how do you use what you've done to reflect that on them and let them learn.
In my mind, I just think about all the meets that I've done, and everyone is so different, you know? I mean, you know, if a lifter's not being themselves, I'll mention a meet where I wasn't myself and I didn't do well, you know, and meets where I was being myself and I was comfortable, I did well. And I'll use that as an example, and I'll try to, you know, use that same philosophy as a coach. Opening lighter. Hey, I've been on, you know, a lot of times my experiences with this are from US teams, because you don't have a say when you're on Team USA. You're there for points. You don't even have a name. You know, you're there. You're a point setter.
You got your briefcase, your suit on, going to work.
You're not there for you. So I've had a lot of coaches open me light internationally and then ended up, you know, going 5 for 6 with a great day and being like, whoa, I opened actually lighter than I wanted to, but I actually ended probably actually better than I had planned. And then some meets I've opened up too high, went 2 for 6. Still did well, but probably could have made more lifts. And so you always just kind of think about past experiences that you've had in a meet, which I think helps me as a coach, to be honest with you, on, you know, mistakes and good decisions I've made, you know, being too jacked up, being too calm, you know, cutting too hard, not getting enough sleep the night before, you know, what to eat before, not too much food, not enough food, having the sugar on you at all times, you know, lifters that don't have sugar on them is a mistake, you know, things like that.
No, that it's great to be able to have that catalog of meets that you've done and that resume to pull from and inspire your athletes, or at least give them lessons that they can take to heart. What would you say as a coach now is your biggest challenge?
Oh man, that's such a good question. Really good question. You know, I'd probably say my biggest challenge is doing it for the athlete and not myself. And I know that might come across kind of slightly strange, but for so long, it's been about me lifting and me competing and me winning and me being on the teams and, you know, me being filmed and training and the hype of the competition and the battle sessions between me and other lifters like Jared Fleming, et cetera, wanting to make teams, wanting to go to the Olympics, things like that. And so, you know, even mistakes I've made in the past with having my own gym, I was a coach kind of starting out in the coaching world back in 2013, was, you know, it was more about me putting together a coaching resume and me beating other coaches. And, you know, I got in that same mindset of me having the best gym, and, you know, it was too much about me. And, you know, now it's all about my athletes and having to refocus everything just to put into my athletes, and truly, truly, I want them, and this comes easy, I want them to do well and great, and I'm there for them. That's not a struggle. But taking the attention off of, you know, me being competitive with myself can be tough. You know, that's why I don't go out when lifters lift. I stay in the back with the TV because I don't want to make it about me. And it's like Mike Tyson. You know, they asked Mike Tyson why he doesn't fight anymore. And he said, because the ego takes over and I become a person I don't necessarily like. He is making a slight comeback, which is interesting. That's a whole different
podcast. That's going to be incredible when that happens.
But it's kind of the same thing. Like it's not about me anymore. And I'm not going to sit here and say it's easy, because when I go to these meets, I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to lift right now. And I want my athletes to beat these people, and I want my athletes to succeed. And then I find myself saying I too much. It's not about me. It's about the athlete. And, you know, that's something that I think everyone could possibly, you know, work on.
No, I agree. And actually, you know, I had a conversation with another coach a couple weeks ago, and they mentioned sort of the same thing on, you know, the reason that, you know, they don't go out, you know, when their lifter is going, you know, behind the curtain to do their lift. And, you know, I think you've inspired me. I want to try that. I think, you know, I had so many beginners when I started coaching, and they were always so nervous. And my thing was like, I'll be with you the whole time. Just please sign up for the weightlifting meet, and I'll hold your hand the whole way through. So I would always just walk out with them. And at most local meets, there's no curtain, but you've inspired me. I want to try that. Definitely at the next meet where it's like an AO or something like that. It's like, no, I'm going to be back here looking at the board and whatnot. You go out by yourself and make that lift. And it's almost like taking the safety net away, like, and going out there, and it's just you. It's mm-hmm. just you. And I definitely want to try that. And I would say even a step further, you know, teammates don't need to go out there either. It's like, just you. Let this be just about you. All right. No, I love that. Well, one more thing I wanted to talk to you about with you, John, before we get off here is you're going to be in a movie.
Oh my gosh. I can't believe it. Yeah. Adam called me, and you know, it started out, you know, the artist in the Olympian, the short film back then, turning into the movie called The Weight. My boy Zach is in it as the lead role. So I don't know. I think I'm going to be in the movie lifting a few clips here and there. I guess I do have some lines, which is pretty cool. So they're going to fly me out to New York and shoot sometime in October, I guess. But yeah.
So I have a theory. So yeah. I haven't heard, you know, any news on this, you know, so on your part, I don't know if you know your part, but I'm going to try to guess it. You're either going to be the supportive teammate mm-hmm. or maybe you'll be the villain.
Oh, I'm the bad guy. I think I'm the guy that back, and I'm yelling Shankle and slamming bars, and you know, I assume he beats me. I hope he does, because then I'm gonna look. So I don't know.
It's from what I've heard, like when you listen to actors talk, it's fun to play the bad guy. Like, you get to just really just let your personality out and do that. And the reason I say, you know, like you're the villain is just because I think you would have the acting ability to pull off such an important role. Because like villains are supposed to be, you know, like loud and grandiose and have a personality. And I think you would do very good at that.
Well, whatever role it is, I'm game, but being the villain would be awesome. So I'm down for it.
Where are you going to draw your acting inspiration from? Is it going to be Leo? Is it going to be Russell Crowe? Some Nick Cage in there?
Probably just going to be straight Nick Cage, man. Just get crazy, get wild, let it loose.
You have to practice your crazy eyes. The Nick Cage crazy eyes.
Off.
Yeah. He's off. Oh, gosh. Take these weights off.
Yes.
Oh, gosh. Well, that's going to be amazing. So you're filming in October, and then it'll probably come out sometime in 2021, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. That's the plan. Excited. So we'll see. This will
be the first feature-length weightlifting movie, a movie on our sport.
Yeah, which is exciting. So it's awesome. I'm excited.
It's long overdue. So I can't wait. You know, like, well, the more that happens with that project, we'll have to have you come back on and talk about it, and we'll definitely promote it on the show. John, thank you so much for coming on the show. Where can people follow you? You know, probably everyone already listening to the show is following you, but let's put it out there to the world, because I've been trying to branch out. You know, I've been having CrossFitters on, I've been having strong men and strong women on, powerlifters.
I got to do better on my show is branching out, getting outside the box. So I respect that, James. I mean, you could follow me at Attitude Nation. That's simple, on Twitter and Instagram, mostly on Instagram. And you can go to my website, doweightlifting.com, for straps, seminars, coaching, you name it, we do it. But yeah, James, thanks for having me on, man.
Oh, yeah. And you can also find an awesome book on doweightlifting.com, The Dark Orchestra, co-written with myself on there.
Dude, best book in the world, brother.
It is. It is. You know what this reminds me of, this podcast right now? Our old Skype talks.
Oh, man. Yeah. You're bringing back memories. Wow. Yep.
When we would get on Skype and you would tell me about your story and your philosophies and methods, and I would just take notes. You know, I still have them all.
Oh, dude, we should put that like in a DVD and sell it.
Yeah. Yeah. Put them out there. It's crazy looking at those videos and how young we both look.
Oh, absolutely. Well, thanks, James, man. It was a pleasure being on the show. Congrats on the new podcast, man. I'm, you know, have me back on anytime.
Thank you. And for everyone listening, make sure you head on over to The Barbell Strikes Back on Instagram. Follow that page. Follow me at James A. McDermott. Head on over to iTunes. Give the show a 5-star rating. Leave a positive review or just some feedback. And thank you so much for listening. John, thank you again for coming on.
Hey, thanks, James.